During his long tenure at Microsoft, our guest has worked to evolve the Microsoft Cloud into a trusted security platform it is today. In our final session of the day, we're excited to bring you Microsoft's number one security leader, CVP, and Chief Information Security Officer, Brett Arsenal. Brett, thanks for being here.
You bet.
Lots to talk about.
Yeah.
Lots of advice we'd like to extract from you. The threats we've discussed so far in the show, and there are many of them, from international terrorism to data breaches in the news, having an effect on how governments, businesses, consumers view and use technology, correct?
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's a little scary watching the show, actually. I should have signed up for this job.
Yes. There's a lot to take in. So talk about how you have seen the security landscape evolve in the last few years, how it impacts the way companies should be thinking about security.
Yeah, it's certainly changed a lot from particularly in the last 5 years. But I think a number of things. There's technological changes, business changes, mm-hmm. government changes. So you think about when the, not 5 years ago, but before that, all of your applications being contained within a firewall, to just being able to get to your applications through a VPN, to now your applications are hosted on a variety of SaaS providers that Julia was showing you, mm-hmm. and a variety of clients that may never traverse your corporate network. Just the whole connectivity and technology model has changed. The massive evolution of connection. I mean, the classic statement is the internet was made to connect, not to protect. And so you, when you think of the prevalence of that, clearly we've seen a lot of things changing in that technological landscape that really have created a wonderful financial opportunity for people to do not so good things.
Sure.
And so you see, obviously, sophistication of attacks, persistence of attacks, just continue to get better. It's just a bad way to say it, but the reality is it makes the situation for us worse.
Sure.
So we see that, and then of course, there's been a big trend recently around legislation, and I refer to it as digital xenophobia, this idea that people want to keep data within boundaries. And so how do you do that and keep the values of the free flow of information and networks and everything else, but also protect people's data within countries? So those are two of the big things I think that we've seen happen and evolving in the threatscape today.
It seems like the public awareness even has grown. Entertainment is sort of glamorizing, right? Hackers and cyber attacks. And in some situations, it almost appears as though they're the good guys. You're almost rooting for them to take down a company. Is that making your job more difficult?
Well, yeah. Everything that puts gives people a reason to want to attack a company, whether it's for political gain, whether it's for whatever view you might have. It may not be for financial motivation. It may not be for espionage or a nation-state mm-hmm. activity. Yeah, anything just creates one more vector that we have to go protect against. It makes it harder.
Sure.
And I will say it's interesting. It's a double-edged sword, obviously, with the awareness. Certainly the priority of security and the budget to go work on the things is, that part of it's probably somewhat helpful. But on the flip side, driving the awareness and the capabilities to lots of people just increases the threats, the threat model for me.
So what are Microsoft security commitments to its customers?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we continue to make really, when we were thinking about the cloud service and this model again of now we have cloud services and mobile as well, mm-hmm. we really sort of focus on four commitments. One, and probably first and foremost, is that we protect people's data. Second is that we provide privacy around the data, and more importantly, privacy and control of the data. And then third, as I mentioned, we really do have to be very careful about monitoring regulations around the world and as a corporate citizen, a global corporate citizen, ensure that we're, you know, applying accordingly in those countries where the regulations apply. And then fourth is just, again, continuing to provide more and more transparency. Because you have children and mm-hmm. you go through this, you want to make sure that you protect the rights, but you also have transparency and that things aren't being shared that you don't want.
Sure.
As an example. Yeah. At least it worries me. So.
Let's talk about, even from a company standpoint and even a brand awareness standpoint, what role are tech providers like Microsoft playing in these debates unfolding around the world? Because like you said, with great opportunity comes risk, and everybody's got an opinion on what we should have access to and who should have access to it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of opinions for sure. I think we have a number of roles. We certainly have a role in providing technology along mm-hmm. the four principles I just mentioned. I also think, though, you know, it's really simple for us to think back. What are the core values we think about as a company? Then what principles does that drive? Which are the four I just mentioned? And then how do we turn those values and principles into commitments? And obviously, for us, a big part of that is working with governments, understanding the regulatory changes as they're coming and ensuring we're meeting those obligations, ensuring we're protecting, again, the data. And then if need be, we'll go protect for our customers on their behalf, because now that we're a custodian of many of their data, mm-hmm. much of their data on our cloud services, we'll also act in the best interest of them if we have to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of what we've been hearing about over the summit today, Microsoft security strategy anchored around the protect, detect, and respond.
Yeah.
How do you as CISO apply the strategy at Microsoft?
Yeah, the protect, detect, respond has been around for a long time, longer than I've been here,
right.
Which is sort of interesting. And I think you'll see when you're asking about the emerging trends, mm-hmm. a lot of people have been overly focused on the protection piece. And so there's no such thing as perfect security, obviously. But when you think about the threatscape that we have today with, you know, again, the sophistication and the persistence of attacks, it's really, and you look at the things you'll see about in the news, the differentiator really becomes your ability to do great detection and great response. Mm-hmm. And so this assumed breach mentality goes back to, it doesn't mean you don't do protection, but you really, like, I think about a very big shift in resourcing to our detection capabilities and then how we respond, both publicly, internally, and then how we contain and make sure the systems are resilient so even under attack they still work. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a large resource shift, technological shift, and policy shift around that. How do you think about detection and response? Which is great in the cloud world because our detection capabilities are drastically increased by, you know, the amount of data we get to go use. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of that.
While we're on the cloud, what is cloud scale intelligence and how can it help companies strengthen their security postures?
I think cloud scale intelligence. So remember, I'm just a practitioner trying to protect the company like anybody else on this call. That's probably a marketing term and it's an awesome one. I love that they did it. The way I think about it really is when we think about cloud scale intelligence, it is interesting that the things we, of course, that people allow us because we give you transparency control over your data. But I think Terry did a good job talking about, for example, the advanced threat protection we're doing. We get visibility into data and correlation with machine learning we just could never do before. So finding things and taking action on them is much, much better. But there's lots of cloud intelligence, not just us, other companies obviously do that. And so you'll hear a lot of people talk about speeds and feeds. How much data do you get and how quickly do you get it? I process 20 billion events a day. But that's actually not the most interesting thing. The diversity of the data is actually probably more interesting. And the things we think about at Microsoft are not just mm-hmm. network speed data that you get from a telco or cloud data you can get from other cloud providers. It's the correlation of the cloud data, the network data, and the endpoint data that really is that diversity that gives you the best intelligent graph you can mm-hmm. use. And so when I think of hyperscale, or what's the correct term I'm using? I'm reading it wrong.
Yes, the one you didn't want to even address. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no. In the intelligent cloud, when we think about it, that's really how we think about it is the correlation across multiple areas and the diversity of the data we can use, and then using the compute capability and storage capability of the cloud to really take action on that more effectively. In terms of accuracy and speed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, this is an open-ended question, but I think it's probably very relevant to a lot of the people watching right now, big companies, small companies. When it comes to security, they all know, yeah, that's important, but I don't know that I have the time or the resources.
Yeah.
And I know there's probably not a specific answer, but where should companies at large be prioritizing their resources when it comes to protecting their organizations?
Well, and that's a kind of a trick question I think you've thrown at me, which is great. But the size of the company also makes a big difference, right? Because some companies will have one person who's your IT person, your security person, and everything in a small business or small medium business to, you know, large governments that have, you know, large staffs of security people or companies like ours that have a decent, never big enough size staff for security, just in case my boss is watching.
Yes.
But one thing that I think is interesting is while the press has done a lot around the shiny objects and all the things that we've read about and the breaches and everything else, there still comes down to sort of five low to moderate cost things that would prevent over 85% of all the breaches that happen today. So, you know, good patch management, keeping your OSs current, keeping your antivirus, even though some people say antivirus doesn't work, I still would use it, but I agree there's other things we can do beyond that. And then good identity management and security monitoring. Those five things alone, and if you want to add the sixth one, which is a little bit more complicated as whitelisting, but those five will really, really prevent a huge percentage of the breach stuff that actually happens. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. And for me, obviously, a lot of the things we do, like our workload servers and things like that, some of the hygiene stuff, that's what we refer to as your general hygiene. The more I move that to the cloud, the more I offload that from my space to a cloud provider. We're one of those cloud providers, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to think about the advanced threats, but it's also really, really important to think about the basic hygiene as well. And the press has a wonderful capability of overplaying the sensational events, which are super important, and we learn from them, we work on them. But it's not hopeless. I think if you do the hygiene, you feel like you're doing good, then you can start reallocating your resources on the other pieces.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't help the news business because they've got to tease. They got to make sure that you watch tonight at 11 when they tell you that the sky is falling, right?
I've learned a lot in the last year about the difference between a press event and a protection event.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I did. It was not my highlight of knowledge.
Now, further advice from you. How can companies best engage with their workforce to help advance the security for their organizations?
Yeah, it's a really good question because it's super easy, particularly at a tech company like ours, to keep focusing on technology and controls and a whole bunch of elements to protect the environment. But at the end of the day, it's still a user issue, right? And so, again, going back to this, what are active adversary types actions versus what are inadvertent issues on the inside? And then how do users play a general role all up?
Right.
I think in the last few years, one of the largest resource changes I made was just in education and awareness. And so, interestingly, though, education awareness is a funny thing because you're trying to change your user behavior. And so, the bottom line is, if people don't know, they can't care. But if they don't know, there's no, you know, they people always say that. What's your biggest fear? And I say, well, that people don't care about securing things. And so, and I said that they can't care if they don't know. And so, my job is to make sure they know, and then add some elements to that. But I think really good education awareness programs are good. However, they need to be relevant and real. So using some of the events to make your education real and forthcoming is good. And also thinking outside of just the corporate structure. So I'll use the United States as an example. There's different examples globally, but most people will do a lot of online shopping, you know, around Black Friday. And so even internally doing campaigns about how to protect your own identity and your credit card information when you're doing online shopping, turns out it has derivative values inside the corporate environment. Or how children go on to vacation and what should you do to protect your children? People are very interested in protecting their children. And so again, you get this wonderful overflow value about how to protect things in the corporate environment as well.
Right.
And then lastly, I do think there's some technological changes that have helped us pretty significantly. We used to do education awareness programs. Did you go to college? What state?
In Washington.
In Washington.
The State College. to narrow it down.
That's excellent. Yeah. But you may have had an issue where a professor, you've seen this, where the professor pours knowledge in your head.
Yeah.
And then you pour it back onto the exam and it's no longer in your head, so it's somewhat ephemeral. So how do you get things to stick beyond that that model? I'm not saying that about your school, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, yes. No, that's all right. We're good.
But I think when we do that with user education awareness, a lot of programs are designed to, when they see something, and Julia showed an example of credit card data as an example, and where you'll catch it at the edge, and then you'll stop it, and then a day later you'll notify users. Whereas now we're integrating it into the Office experience on O365, where real time, even while you're typing, if we see something, we'll let you know in real time. And then we'll, as opposed to just blocking it, we'll say, well, maybe we've miscategorized it. Is this something you still want to send? And it's up to the enterprise to make their choice, and so you can block it, but we can go so far as to say, here's why, you know, give context to why you're making the decision, make them aware of the decision they've actually made so they start owning the security culture as opposed to the IT department, and even to the point where I can insert content into the message stream so that the recipient now knows their responsibility of receiving the messaging. And so that way of integrating education awareness real time into your work experience is a much better way than this stopgap step rate function that we've done before.
Yeah. Although ignorance can be bliss, yes, perhaps the education awareness, that's one step. And of course, there's an increasing amount of attention on security at the senior executive and board levels. You know, is it only security teams that, you know, ultimately carry the responsibility for protecting the digital assets, or has this changed, you know, given your role, of course, what are the things that keep you up at night?
Do you
sleep at night?
Yeah,
there's a two-part question.
Yeah, that's great. I'll answer the second part after. I think that's one of the other trends that we've seen is clearly security going from sort of a backroom issue to the boardroom. And I obviously present to our board on a regular basis, and I review for other companies their cyber reports to their boards. And so, not that I wouldn't wear a jacket for the show, but that was one of the big changes, was the clothing change that had to happen for this. So I do think, when we think about it, though, it's a little bit on the education and awareness piece that's so critical, is how do you make sure that it's not an IT person's responsibility or a single entity's responsibility, that everybody in the company, it's really about changing culture in the company. So, you know, whether it's the receptionist that's having people come in, whether it's our data center physical security, whether it's the developers writing software or the sales team or the MTC group that was just here that's doing these wonderful envisioning sessions, how are they helping people understand how to do security? And so the important thing is it's not one entity's responsibility, and the companies you really see that do well at this is people who understand it has to be part of the cultural norm for everything that everybody does. Everyone has a role in that place. Even when Pete earlier talked about the 3,500 security professionals, that's people that their everyday job is security, but everybody's job has a part of security every day.
Sure.
And so that's super important. I think I may have forgotten the question about do we sleep at night. I think there's a wonderful visual that somebody sent out about a month ago to me, and it was four of these stick figure positions, and it was the CEO at night, and they're sort of sprawled in the bed, you know, not like all crunched up. And then there was the CFO that was a little bit more, you know, in over on their side. And I think there was the CIO who was sort of in the fetal position. And then when they show the CISO role, there just isn't anybody there because they don't get to go to bed at all.
Yes, so, good point.
Yeah. So no, not a lot of it's not a lot of sleep.
And at your level, I mean, what does, for example, keep you up at night? Is it just this ever evolving landscape of threats and what's coming next, or is it keeping on top of the ones that already exist?
Yeah, I think probably two things. There's the little things that keep me up at night. So if we're responding to, if we find things and we respond, we need to respond, and you need a lot of judgment on what to go do. That's always a 7x24 function. I have an unbelievable team that's really good at it, so I don't have to be up every night all the time. But that's certainly one of the realities of the job. And then there's the other component, like what really bugs you. And I think there's probably three things that keep me up at night. One is this thing about apathy. I do worry about, just at a global level, the progress we've made since 1993, and I'm not claiming that's when the internet started, but when you think of the hockey stick starting to take on that Al Gore,
sure.
I think.
Yes.
But I do think the state of connectedness that we've built has provided some unbelievable capabilities that just weren't there before. And so I don't want an erosion of trust to undermine the value of that information flow and the democratization of information and everything else. So I do just worry sometimes that people will become so worried about things that will end up, again, that's my digital xenophobia concern and other things, where we just won't have that beautiful access to the information in the global network we do today.
Yeah.
So that's one thing for sure I worry about. In the protect, detect, and respond model, obviously, in the last few years, we've seen the financial money passing through cybercrime surpass that of global drug trade.
Wow.
And so that means there's a huge economic model there. And so I worry about, it's sort of the how do you beat the war on drugs scenario. And so it's that obviously concerns me. I think that's we need to make sure that model gets disrupted so that we can do that. So those two are probably the big ones. And then my friend Mark Riley probably keeps me up. But other than that, I think I'm pretty good.
What surprises you the most about your job? Has changed quite a bit, obviously, as all of this continues to evolve. What surprises you the most about the work that you do? Is it simply that the problems aren't going away, or is it just that people keep getting perhaps, you don't want to say smarter, but maybe more clever with how they try desperately to get into our information?
It's such a cliche statement. If all the intelligence that people use to break things, if it were used to create good, it would be so amazing. But that's not going to happen. But I do think I love the fact that the job is different every day. I like solving and working on really hard problems, and I like learning something. And every day I learn something new. Like I said at the beginning, I didn't understand the press thing, so that's amazing. Probably never have me on the show again. And but I think that part is fascinating to me. I do think, sort of how water seeks its own level, or if you've ever tried to hold mercury as a, playing with a thermometer or something as a kid, the ability for, once you fix one part of something, the ability for the entire network of bad things to happen going around that and finding new ways and always finding new ways and always finding new, it's amazing to me how persistent and intelligent people are. I mean, I think that in the trend thing is, as operating systems have gotten so much better in just fundamental security, and you heard a lot about the Windows 10 functions. In my opinion, I support more than just Windows, but I mean, the step rate functions and improvement in Windows 10, the last time we had that much drastic improvement, you know, was when we went to XPS v2. And it's amazing how good it is, but we see now, just all up, when you get better at that, you're seeing two things happening. People are going up the app stack, because that's the easier place to go, and people are going down the supply chain, because it's a way to get around those two things, or try to get around those two things. And so the adaptability of the adversary is probably the thing that surprises me the most.
Now, and I know this might be hard to narrow down, but what are some key takeaways here? We've got a massive online audience watching right now from various places, various organizations. Any parting thoughts, some key findings, takeaways that you want security professionals to leave this virtual summit with, saying, I know what my marching orders are?
Yeah, I think I'd probably, a couple things. Number one is, if you're a security professional, make sure you understand and know what the responsibilities of non-security professionals are around security. There's a less than 0.5% unemployment rate in the industry. There's a lot of growth. So there's just not an availability of resources. So convince your friends to become a security
Some of it's
person.
Just the manpower.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's
recruit.
Something. Yeah, recruit. Make sure academic institutions are creating more capability in this space, and so are corporations. I think that's super important for people to go do. And as I said before, it's not the security professional's job to own all security. It's their job to make sure that they've changed the culture and everybody understands their role in their organization around security, whether the organization is your family, whether it's yourself, or whether it's a large enterprise. So I think that's one big thing to take away. The second thing, as I'll go back to, is don't forget the hygiene, right? Don't forget the basics. You'll see these wonderful, I grew up in an interesting neighborhood, and you'd see all these, you know, massive bars on windows and everything else, but all the back doors were open, side doors were there. And
sure,
So thinking about how you get that basic level of hygiene and then build on that and build on that and build on that, I think is really, really important.
You think there's a lot of false senses of security out there? Like you said, if somebody says, I've downloaded the latest software, I should be good, but they're leaving the back door open?
Yeah, you see it a lot. You'll see a lot of people invest in things and then a year later they're not using them, and there's no shortage of vendors providing, you know, there's like 600 venture-backed companies in the U.S. alone just in security. So, you know, actually really, really being methodological about thinking about, again, where you're thinking about your spend on your protect versus your detect and your respond, and then making sure you're doing the hygiene. And I think you can build a pretty balanced program in that. And then the third thing is just making sure you're measuring the effectiveness of the stuff, because I see lots of people put the things in, but then it's like in the old days, you do tape backup or whatever type of backup. I'm marking my age there, sorry. But then people didn't test their recovery programs. And so when they'd have something happen, they turned out they couldn't recover the data anyway. So making sure you're building synthetic transactions to test all your systems and they really are finding things and all that is really important. So hygiene, testing, and talent and people, huge.
Now, I would also imagine that as technology has evolved and more of us are mobile, a lot of people working full-time from home or at the coffee shop or in the back room here, some of us can get away with using our phones for an entire workday and accomplish everything. That's a nice luxury for some of us, but I would imagine that also makes it rather tricky.
It does.
You.
It makes it, but again, so, you know, our goal again is this, you know, empower every person or organization to achieve more. So this productivity is a big part of that. So I can't refute that being mobile and being able to do those things is awesome. And there are ways to actually do it so that you get both. Like there's this fundamental misbelief in the scales of justice, right, that you have to trade off user experience for good security. And so I think that's one of the other, I didn't say it in the basic piece of the four takeaways, but a number of things that, and I'll just talk about the things we've done, it's not the pitch from the product side.
Right.
But like when I look at how do I do, the boundary of the network is eviscerating, and there's new boundaries. The big boundary is gonna be identity, right? Who are you? And when you say you are you really who you say you are and all the other things. And you having a username and password is as was pointed out, is not a good model. And biometrics are interesting, but we do two-factor auth, like, you know, everyone has a badge or a fob or some other thing. But the know something, have something, be something is a really simple model because you generally have your have something with you all the time. And so I really think that we can get that productivity in things like Hello, where I do facial or fingerprint recognition and I don't pass any passwords. The improvement in security is huge, but the user experience is better too. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to touch the touch sensor, have the image of your face, as opposed to remembering your long, complex password that I want to make you change every 71 days. Mm-hmm. So there's a good example of better user experience and more security at the same time.
Good stuff. Brett, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for helping us close things out. We appreciate it.